Okay. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. I think we're ready to begin. My name is Fred Wilson. I'll be the hearings officer for today's public hearing. This is the time set aside for the St. Mark's conditional use application. The file number is LU19-24676. Can't read my own handwriting. A9. Today is February 5th. It's about 1:30 in the afternoon. This is being recorded. We have the contents of the file from the planning department, and if you want a copy of the staff report, there are some back there by the desk. There are a few things a hearings officer has to talk about before every public hearing. I need to disclose whether I've had any ex parte contacts. That's any discussions about the merits of the case before tonight. Today, I haven't. Only thing I know about this case is what I've received from the planning department, and it's in the file. I also need to disclose whether I'm biased, whether I'm for or against the application for any reason other than the merits of the case, and I'm not. I'm not familiar with the parties or the property. I don't have any reason to feel one way or the other. Finally, I need to disclose whether I have any conflicts of interest. I don't. I'm in private practice in Salem. I don't have any private clients in the city of Portland, let alone anywhere near the subject property. I don't own property in the city of Portland or have family that owns the property in the city of Portland. If you haven't been to one of these hearings before, the way it'll work is we will start with the staff report. After the staff report, the applicant will have an opportunity to present their case. After that, anybody who's not part of the applicant's team but still wants to testify in favor of the application can testify. After that, we'll have a chance for people who are opposed to the application to testify. After that, we'll have a chance for staff to respond to any issues that come up. And finally, the applicant will have an opportunity for final rebuttal since they have the burden of proof. If you do testify, please give us your name and address and spell your last name for the record so we have that. Also, please direct your testimony to the approval criteria. They are listed in the staff report. They are the conditional use approval criteria. That's the only thing I can make my decision based upon. So if I think something's a terrible idea, if it meets all the approval criteria, I still have to prove it. On the other hand, if I think it's a wonderful idea, but it doesn't meet one of the approval criteria, then I still can't approve it. So any sort of discussion about things that don't have to do with the applicable approval criteria, it's just not something I can consider. Also make sure you raise all issues you have. If you don't raise those issues, you may be precluded from raising them in the future if there are any further proceedings or appeals of this case. If the applicant has any concerns at any of the proposed conditions of approval, maybe unconstitutional takings or any other issues with those, make sure you raise those issues or you may be precluded from raising them in the future. You have an opportunity to request that the hearing be continued or the record be left open. Please do that. If you're going to do that, make sure you do that when you testify. Let's see, if you haven't turned off your cell phones, this would be a good time to do it. And if everyone could please be cordial and polite and stick to the issues and try not to get too emotional or make any sort of personal attacks, that would be great. I've never had to, postpone a hearing and make everybody come back and take another day off work, that kind of thing, because people couldn't control themselves. And I'm sure that won't happen today, but just everybody trying to remember to be cordial and polite and stick to the issues, that would be great. I think with that, we can turn to the staff report. I do have one quick question, and we might need to ask the applicant about this too, but there's a little bit of confusion about whether this is a 100-day or 120-day clock kind of decision. Do you?
Well, it was submitted by, we didn't receive a letter in the record from Housing Bureau indicating it was a priority case for them, so we're treating this 100-day.
We did receive a letter from the Housing Bureau indicating it was designated as a project that falls in their definition of affordable housing. So we have been processing it as a 120-day.
Is that based? Do you know what that's based on? Because under ORS 197-311, it seems like that only applies to affordable housing type situations, and that seems like maybe that's what's going on. Might potentially go on the north part of the property later, but not this case. So I'm trying to figure out why this would be 100 days.
I do not know exactly what that is based on, but that's the procedure we have opted to use for this case.
Okay. And so are you aware of the city has when they're doing 100-day clock cases, they sort of schedule a potential tentative appeal with the city council just to sort of keep the, make things quicker?
I was not aware of that. To my knowledge, I didn't realize that. that was a part of the process.
Okay, all right. Well, we take care of that later, I guess. Okay, one thing, before we start, and you may be getting into this as well, I noticed in a number of the submissions that people submitted already in opposition to the project, a lot of the opposition, or concerns at least, seem to be about the potential development of the north part of the site for multifamily housing or veterans or transitional housing, that kind of thing. And so that's, and I can certainly understand those concerns, but that's just not part of this case. This case is just to remove that northern part of the property from the existing conditional use for the church. So this case will have nothing to do one way or the other with whether or not that transitional housing, if that's what we're gonna call it, will go in or not. There will be a future process for that. I think it probably depends on exactly what they may or may not apply for as to what type of process that would be, but that's not what we're considering today. So even if I approve every single thing that the applicant's asking for here, that will have no impact on whether or not that approves any transitional housing. That's your understanding as well, isn't it, Mr. Jenks?
Yes.
Okay. All right. With that, I think we'll turn to the staff report.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Rodney Jennings. I'm a city planner with the Bureau of Development Services on the Title 33 team. We're the team at the Bureau of Development Services that processes reviews for applications like this for conditional uses and master plans and some other zoning land use reviews. As you noted, the case we're here for today is LU19246769CU. It's a conditional use review. I was going to also emphasize that this proposal doesn't include a review of any future development that might occur on this development site. What the actual proposal is here today is there is a portion of the conditional use boundary that was approved through a previous conditional use reviews that the applicant is requesting to remove from the boundary of the church's conditional use site. That's a 0.43 acre area at the north of the site. I also want to note that the proposal that I'm going to describe here is slightly different from what was shown in the notice of proposal that was sent out. In that case, the applicant had revised their proposal slightly between the date the notice went out and prior to my preparing the staff report. And I'll describe a little bit of what that difference is when I get to the next slide. I also want to note that between the completion of the staff report on January 24th and today, I have gotten some additional items that I wanted to submit into the record of the hearing, and I'll describe them here. First off, at the time the staff report was prepared, there was a recommendation of denial based on some information that had not been provided to the Bureau of Development Services. So the applicant did provide the Bureau of Environmental Services with the additional information they needed to complete a review on January 28th, and I have a copy of what the applicant provided and also a revised addendum to the, or not a revised, but an addendum to the land use response that Environmental Services provided for the report. Where they have indicated that additional information was provided to them on January 28th, and based on that, they are now able to find in their response that all storm and sanitary sewer services are acceptable to them, and they no longer recommend approval. I mean, pardon me, no longer recommend denial. So the staff recommendation has also changed based on that evaluation. I got an updated addendum to the response from the Portland Bureau of Transportation, PBOT, that describes in more detail their analysis of the availability of parking in the area, and also indicating that they would not object to a proposal similar to what the applicant has proposed here.
based on the number of parking spaces that are available that would remain on the church site and also are available on street. And their previous response had a recommended condition of approval, which they are no longer necessarily stating as necessary, requiring joint parking between the church and the conditional use site. So there's that. And then finally, I got a letter, which I believe also was provided to the hearings office, based on the email that I got, said it was mailed to the hearings office. So, it's from a neighboring property owner, Shem Harding, at 2922 Southeast 54th Avenue. It raises seven issues based on the approval criteria, and I'd like to briefly go through the staff response to those issues, and also some of them I'll describe in more detail later in my presentation here.
Is there a written response to that, or is this going to be it right now?
This is going to be it.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll take better notes then.
So first off, he notes that that the notice of proposal did state that, well, it stated the approval criteria, and it misstated that the actual name of those approval criteria was conditional use approval criteria for, misstated and said, instead of saying residential and campus institutional zones, it said campus industrial zones. So I guess that's true. That's an oversight. VDS staff doesn't think that oversight in itself is enough that we should require re-notification and rescheduling of this hearing. And in the staff report, actually at one point it still says the campus industrial zones, but in the bulk of the staff report it refers to the campus institutional zone. I also note that no part of this request is in or near a campus institutional zone. So all of the zones we're talking about here are related to conditional use are residential, so it's accurate.
Excuse me, can you speak up? I can't hear you.
Sorry, I'll try to talk in the microphone more. I apologize. Let me reorient this. It also raises an issue about proportion of household living uses and whether group living and SOR living and a number of other things qualify its household living, and whether this and also indicates that this there should be a use a condition of approval requiring that any development on the on the new site, if this is approved, not allow SROs and hotel uses and some other things. Generally, the response to that is SROs are not allowed in the R2 zone anyway, and this, as you noted, this review is not for development that might occur on this new site if it's created, all of which would be subject to the development standards and the use restrictions of the R2 zone. There's another issue under physical compatibility related to a zoning code requirement that there be a 10-foot L3 buffer, landscape buffer, based on table 120-7 in the zoning code. And I'm going to get in a little bit more detail of that in my discussion of the proposal. But the key point there is that there is that requirement in the table, but there's also a note 5 to that table that states that if there is surface parking on the conditional use site, that surface parking is subject to the setback and landscaping standards of Chapter 33.266, which is the parking and loading standards for the zoning code. There's another issue raised about physical compatibility and the issue of trash, and the staff report does include a recommended condition that the location of
garbage and recycling facilities be identified somewhere on the church site, and that if it's not there currently, that that there be a requirement that they that the church obtain a permit to provide those facilities. There's another issue related to livability, where the letter notes that the church is currently hosting other services on the site, including closed closets, food pantry, and there's a list of things. And the statement there is that essentially the parking, there are no impacts associated with those uses that haven't been addressed. And that the parking area at the north of the church site needs to remain there in order to address those, and also to provide parking for those services. So generally the finding that I was going to describe in this, in the staff review for myself and PBOT, is that the there is adequate parking for the use there now. Staff would have concern if there are late night activities occurring at the church that haven't been occurred, because that's directly related to the approval criteria. But generally, the proposal here is not to change the activities at the church. It's to reduce the church size, and so we wouldn't say that those are necessarily related to this request. There's another issue about parking in the letter. And the key point there, I think, is that there's criticisms of the traffic study was done, because it wasn't done at the time that Franklin High School was in session. So the traffic study that was done was with an approved scope from Portland Bureau of Transportation, was reviewed to using methodology that's approved by them, and as I noted, PBOT staff is here to talk about that, but they do not believe that that study itself is adequate. And then there's also a request that under item 7 in this letter, that there, pardon me, I gotta go scroll down in my notes here, that there shouldn't be an allowance for joint parking between a future SRO use on the church site that might occur and the church itself. And in the review of this, staff determined that in actuality, the church scenario where a future use on the church on the other site was going to be sharing parking and utilizing the church's parking would be okay, but anytime the church wanted to park on, if the church was choosing to park on the adjacent site, that would require an additional conditional use review, because that would be a use parking accessory use associated with the church. So therefore, as I'll talk about later, we're also recommending a condition of approval that that any future use of the church of other parking on this future development site would only be allowed through another conditional use review. So I covered a lot of territory in a start there, because there was a lot in that letter, but I'm going to elaborate a little bit more on this presentation. So I'm going to briefly describe here the proposal. The St. Mark's Conditional Use Church site is located on Southeast Powell Boulevard, between Southeast 54th Avenue and Southeast 55th Avenue. On the screen here, you can see with the thicker boundary is the existing church site. And there's another line there through the north that gives an approximate location of what the portion of the site that the applicant is requesting to remove, where that's located. So the church itself has got a split zoning of CM2 and R2, and you can see a black line there that shows where that boundary is, and the entire portion of the site that is being requested to be removed is all in the R2 zone, and it's the north area of the site. This application, as I noted, differs a little bit from the what was shown in the notice, and the difference is that uh, um,
I don't have my pointer here, unfortunately, but if you look at the lower array of parking on the east side, originally they wanted to keep that within the, take that out of the conditional use boundary, and then the revision was to keep that in, so that line in the middle kind of jogged down at first, and now it goes straight across, and that original proposal was for about 0.53 acre area versus 0.43 acre area. So the context of this site is that the main body of the church is facing southeast Powell, and then there is kind of an addition north of there that's in the R2 zoning area. It's adjacent to commercial uses across the street on both sides of, across southeast 54th on the west side of south, across the street there, there's a commercial use, and then next door there's another commercial retail use. Further on along down southeast Powell, there's more CM2 zoning, which is a commercial mixed-use zone, and also R1 zoning, which is a multi-dwelling residential zone that allows a density of one unit per 1,000 square feet of site area. On the R2 portion of the site, there is also R2 zoning on either sides of opposite sides of southeast 54th and southeast 55th. R2 is a single or a multi-dwelling zone that allows up to 2,000 square feet, one unit per 2,000 square feet of site area. The adjacent lots opposite streets now are currently mostly developed with single dwelling homes. There are some interspersed multi-dwelling units. And then all north of the site, the zoning is R5, which is a single dwelling zone. All of the residential zones in this area have an A overlay, which is called the Alternative Design Density Overlay Zone. That's a zone that allows additional density through incentives and review processes that a developer can choose to use. So I'm going to give a slight tour of the area. This is a view of the church looking out from the front of the church on Southeast Powell Boulevard. This is looking down Powell Boulevard towards the east, showing the retail use on the opposite corner. This is a view of the church from across Powell Boulevard, which is a busy thoroughfare, transit corridor, and traffic corridor. And this is a view looking up Powell Boulevard. I'm going to now go through some slides that just kind of walk around the area, the site, and the immediate vicinity of the site. This is a street, this is Southeast 55th Avenue, looking along the existing retail use, which is the Andong Grocery on the west side there. And then this is an area at the rear of the grocery, which is in a R2 zone. It's not currently used for residence. It's looks like it's mostly used as a storage area for the retail use. This is a view of the parking area, showing the part of the parking area that would be remaining for the most part on the conditional use church site on the east side of the site. This is a view looking down Southeast 55th towards the rear area of the parking lot, showing the interface between the residential area there and the church parking area. And then this is a view of the northeast corner of the area of the parking lot that the applicant is proposing to remove from the site. This is the northwest corner of that very same area. This is the back part of the church building that would that overlays into the R2 zone. And I've drawn a line here that gives a kind of the approximate location of where the boundary between the church site and the new site would be located. I also want to note at this point that part of the reason one of the issues that was brought up in this letter earlier was that the institutional zoning standards table 120-7 require a landscape buffer of 10 feet here, but they also state that where there is surface parking, the landscaping and setback standards for parking areas apply. And there's also an exception in the parking area standards. It's in section 33.266.130. I can slow down if you want to write this down, but 130.G, capital G, dot 2, dot B.
Say that one more time.
33.266.
Okay.
Dot 130.
Okay.
Dot G, dot 2. Dot B, and then it's parentheses 1. And that section says that where there's a shared driveway or parking aisle that straddle a lot line, there, in that situation, you do not have to meet the setback or perimeter landscape standards. So so basically, you can have a property line through a driveway that doesn't have perimeter landscaping on it. But I would note also that the staff report, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later too, when we talk about the approval criteria, has a condition of approval that recommended that parking lot buffer perimeter landscaping setbacks are put in place along the portion of this parking area, which I can show you on the earlier slide. This one along the boundary right in here where the parking area would abut an R2 zone that required that they install the 5-foot landscape L3 landscape perimeter buffer there, where because it would apply along that part of the site because it's on a perimeter lot line abutting an R residential zone. And that is required by the same section in the zoning code. There's a table in there that requires landscaping. In just a few more slides, this is all along Southeast 54th. This is looking south. My arrow's not quite right there, I notice now. Looking south towards Powell Boulevard from where the residential R5 zoning starts, at the back of the parking area that the applicant wants to remove from the site, and showing the church, which the nearest portion to you is in the R2 zone, and then the furthest part of it is in the CM2 commercial mixed-use zone. And then this is looking up the same street the opposite way. And then this is just finally another shot showing the west side of the church at the corner of Southeast 54th and Powell. So the applicable approval criteria for this are located in, these are what the applicable approval criteria. This is a brief description of them. There's one that's related to proportion of household uses, physical compatibility, livability, public services, area plans, and then the Oregon statewide planning goals are also applicable, and that's due to the status that our comprehensive plan is not yet acknowledged by the, it's still under appeal, so that means that until such time it is acknowledged, we have to address those approval criteria have to be addressed to show that it is consistent with those goals until the plan is acknowledged. So staff in the staff report determined that the household uses criterion was met, because based on the review that the applicant did and also another review by staff, that we didn't find that there were any other non-household living uses in the residential area around the church, and we generally will use an area that's equal to the notification range given for the conditional use, which is 400 feet, to determine what that residential area is. And also that the intensity of the scale of proposed use wouldn't be proposed by this, because it would be actually reducing the area of uses that are outside of the that are not household living uses areas, household living uses in this area. I'd also note that group living, there isn't a group living use on the site proposed to the north, but in the future, if that were proposed, that the zoning does allow up to 15 group living uses in that area without having to go through a further conditional use review, although that use is not there at the moment. So we found that the existing church is there. It's been there for a long time, and it's certainly compatible with the scale and size of a building that you would expect to see in an R2 zone. Also in terms of setback in landscaping, with the exception that to meet that development center that I talked about just earlier, a condition is needed to put to require that the landscaping be put in place for the future parking that would stay on the church site. For livability, they found that the proposed use is not proposing to change the activities at the site. Now, there was also the issue raised in this letter that there are other activities occurring there. Generally, if there's a late night operations, and we would consider that anything after 10 p.m., then we would think that's a concern. And I'm hoping the applicant can fill in some more details maybe on what type of activities are occurring there. But our finding is that that the use itself, if anything, reducing the area of the parking might reduce glare. And also that the church needs to find a way to show how it's going to or demonstrate, which they haven't done in the application materials, how they would deal with garbage and recycling on the site, because that would need to be located on the church site somewhere too. Regarding the last criterion, the criterion for public services, our staff report found that, first of all, there's criteria related to transportation. One, that it's supportive of the street designation of the comprehensive plan, and that the transportation system is capable of supporting the proposal. We do have an addendum from PBOT. PBOT's original response implied that parking was certainly adequate to meet their threshold of under 85% on-street parking occupancy. Once that's exceeded, they consider it no longer acceptable. But the studies that were done show that's certainly well within that, significantly under even, and that and I also want to note that PBOT representative here, if you have any questions about that, to talk about that in a little more detail. Because church parking cannot be located on a residential zone that's outside of a conditional use site, we are asking that there be a condition restricting the use of the parking, not allowing the church to park on that portion of the site that would be removed from the church site. Finally,
how many spots are going to be removed by?
I think the applicant can provide more detail on this, but there's 50 currently spaces, and I believe 12 spaces would be on the church site, adjoining site, and then 20 spaces are going to remain on the church site along the south boundary. Along the south perimeter, and then along where the adjacent to where the church building is.
So they're putting new parking spots in there?
Well, there might be some reconstruction necessary, but they're not going to be new because there are already spaces there. So,
I guess so. My question is, how many spots are there for the church now on the whole property, and how many will there be afterwards?
I believe there are 50 spaces total, and it would go down to 20 spaces.
Going to 20, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
As I noted earlier, okay, so we did get responses also from the Police, Water, and Fire Bureau indicating that they have service availability to provide service to the site. And also, I mentioned earlier at the start that the Bureau of Environmental Services was able to revise its response to note that the storm and sanitary services that would be provided on both sites would be acceptable, which is what the criterion asked for. So again, BDS has changed its recommendation of denial to approval. Finally, the last criterion is, well, I guess the last two criterion, but criterion E requires that the application be shown to be consistent with area plans for the area. And I noted, I don't list them here, but there are a number of policies in both the South Tabor Neighborhood Plan and the Outer Southeast Community Plan. That this proposal is consistent with, and I'd refer to the staff report to provide details on those. Same for the Oregon statewide planning goals. Generally, the applicable goals are those related to housing and transportation and public services, and the findings in those are similar to the ones I just described for transportation and Bureau of Environmental Services. So, staff is recommending that the conditional use be approved to remove approximately 0.43 acres from the north boundary of the site. With these are summaries of the conditions that are in the report. One, that the parking spaces on the church on the area to be removed from the site not be used by the church except through a conditional use future conditional use review. One, that the applicant get a permit to install perimeter parking lot landscaping that meets the zoning standards in the area between the church parking spaces and the abutting R-zone lot that is south of those parking spaces, and that a permit be obtained to show the location of the garbage and recycling area, and if it's not currently on the site, to show where it would be on the site and construct a garbage and recycling area that meets current screening standards on the site if necessary. And then finally, this next condition is that the applicant do the legwork necessary to actually create this new site, which would mean confirming some existing lot lines that are already underlying their existing platted lot lines and adjusting those to match what they're proposing as a conditional use boundary. So that concludes my presentation.
So those conditions the same, do they remain the same as they are in the staff report?
They are the same.
Sounded like,
yeah.
PBOT was maybe changing something, but.
Well, so in the staff report, if you read it, the PBOT had the recommended condition and staff didn't adopt that condition.
Oh, okay.
So that's what's changed based on the PBOT memorandum, as they say, yeah, it's fine not to have that the condition we originally asked for.
So you don't have to reject that one anymore.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha. Seems like the main issue is going to be the parking. Would it be a good time to have transportation come talk about that now?
I think that would be a good idea, yeah, because okay. I think you're probably on base with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Tammy Boren King. I'm a planner with the Portland Bureau of Transportation, 1900 Southwest 4th, Suite 5000.
Could you spell your last name?
Sure. B as in boy, O-R-E-N dash King, K-I-N-G.
Thanks.
So the applicants submitted a transportation impact study that included parking counts for both the church and the preschool that are on the site. Whenever you do a parking count study, you also do a count of what is the baseline amount of on-street parking caused by other uses of the area. So you take that count when you're use that you're looking at is not in operation. So typically the peak demand for residential parking is very early in the morning when everybody's at home asleep before people have left for work. So the parking counts that were taken at 4:40 in the morning established that the on-street parking occupancy is 54 cars. So that's like the baseline occupancy for the residential uses within the study area. When they took parking counts during church services on Sunday, there were only 53 spaces occupied on street and 20 spaces occupied in the church's parking lot. So that tells you there's actually a decrease in on-street parking during church services. So the church is not currently having an impact on on-street parking during church services. So the demand is all from the other uses currently in the area.
So in other words, more people who are parked there overnight basically have left during Sunday services.
Correct, by one car.
So it's basically the same. As many people, almost exactly as many people leave, get refilled up by people coming to church.
Or another way to look at it is everybody who's going to church is parking in the church parking lot currently.
Yeah.
And there were 20 cars in the church parking lot during Sunday services.
Okay. It doesn't seem like a lot of cars for a church service. 20,
it does
so.
Not.
Okay.
Yeah. Then during preschool pickup times, the weekday AM pickup, there were 7 cars observed in the church parking lot. And during preschool pickup times, there were 3 cars observed in the church parking lot. So, and similar amounts of on-street parking availability. So based on the parking demand counts that were actually observed in the field, if all of the on-site parking were removed, if there were 0 parking spaces left for this conditional use, we anticipate that on Sunday during church service, 53% of the on-street parking would be occupied. During preschool pickup, 51% would be occupied, and during drop-off, and about 45% in the afternoon. That is well under PBOT's threshold for considering an area to be heavily parked, which is 85%. That's the threshold for needing an area parking permit. There have been multiple statements submitted to the record that would request parking counts be done when Franklin High School is in session.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
But since the parking counts are so far below our threshold for any concern, our traffic engineers did not deem that that was necessary.
So they sort of agree that theoretically, at least, that ought to be something to be taken into account. But since there's so much room, they're clearing the hurdle by so much that even if you did take that into account, they'd still be okay.
It's unlikely anything would change. I do think it is worth noting that Powell is a major transit priority street that is well served by transit service. And for by right development in this area, so granted, not a conditional use, but commercial development in the commercial zones requires no parking. Residential development in the residential zones only requires vehicle parking if over 30 units of housing are proposed and the project is not meeting the inclusionary housing requirements. So for the vast majority of developments, parking isn't required in this area. So, okay. Not the case for conditional uses. We do require parking for conditional uses. PBOT has no objection to removal of all of the parking on this site. The proposal is currently to retain the amount of parking that was observed being used during the peak demand for the church, which is Sunday service.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like Sunday service is the one where if they were going to have problems, that would be it. It seems like there's plenty of space even on the church site during preschool and pickup and
that's what the observational data showed. Yeah.
All right. And so we talked a little bit about your memo that's coming in, but could you maybe summarize that for me again?
Sure.
So
Because
originally you were wanting, there was talk about having some sort of joint agreement so the church could keep using the existing parking lot.
Sure.
But now that's going away. And is that because you're basically saying they don't need it.
Right. PPOT was supportive of the proposal that the applicant brought forward at first. So we were sure, if you want to do 32 parking spaces, keep 32. We have no problem with that. But then when it became apparent that there may be conflict in the zoning code from allowing them to retain all of those parking spaces and still use them for the church, then we entered into, well, how many exactly do you need? And the analysis came up with zero is the answer of how many you really need.
Okay. All right. Thank you for explaining that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any further questions?
That was all my questions. Okay. Thank you.
I will stay if there's additional questions after other testimony.
Thanks. Okay. Now is the opportunity for the applicant to present their case.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Reed Stapleton. I'm a land use planner with Dow. We're a landscape architecture, engineering, and planning firm working with both Home First and the church on this application. I appreciate the opportunity to present to you today, and I will try to keep my comments relatively brief. We have a number of experts on the team who are available to answer any questions that you have.
All right. Stapleton spelled like it sounds.
I think so, like the old airport, S-T-A-P-L-E-T-O-N.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. So, first of all, I think I'll just reiterate both what Rodney covered in his initial statements and what you, Mr. Hearings Examiner, mentioned also, which is that the proposal and the action, the land use action that's subject to the review, is the shrinking of the footprint of the conditional use. I don't think it's any secret that there is a plan for a housing project out here, and I think the Home First and Do Good Multnomah have been very out and open about that. We've had a number of meetings out in the community about the project. Really the specific request and the criteria relate to that shrinking of the conditional use footprint for the church.
So on that, getting back to what I was asking Mr. Jennings about earlier, so the 100 versus 120 day clock, seems like it should be the 120, not the 100. Maybe what you're proposing for the north part of the site, that might, at least under 197.311, that might qualify for the 100 day clock. But right, I'm just curious why this one would.
You know, to be honest with you, that was not a request of ours. It was something that I think was categorized and processed when the application hit the counter at the city. So to be honest with you, it was not a specific request on our part to be processed in that manner. Although, of course, with the end goal and objective to be a housing project, affordable housing project, I think it made sense intuitively, but we weren't necessarily looking at the nuance of that.
Okay. It's just a 20-day difference, but it sort of affects the process the city goes through.
The
way if it was definitely a 100-day clock, I think the way we do it is as soon as the decision comes out, we schedule a tentative appeal with the city council based on a potential appeal. If it's 120-day clock, then we don't do that. So I'm just trying to figure out which shoot to slide this down, basically.
Just to let you know, there in the record in Exhibit G2, there is an email here from a representative of the Housing Bureau confirming, at least for BDS, that we were to view this as a PHB-funded affordable housing project and treat it with a 100-day timeline. Okay.
Now, I don't have any of the G exhibits, so that would explain that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That does refresh my memory. There has been a project liaison in the Housing Bureau, and I think that message came from the Housing Bureau. So
yeah. There. Okay. All right. Well, then maybe we will, just an abundance of caution, we'll treat this as a 100-day clock.
Okay. That makes sense.
I think we can meet. I don't think it'll be a problem to meet that. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Moving on to the merits of the case.
Absolutely. So another point that I just wanted to make briefly, and I think Rodney referenced this briefly in his presentation, but the city is proposing code changes that are going before the Planning Commission actually next week that contemplate this exact situation on numerous church sites specifically, but There are proposed code changes that would allow for the shrinking of conditional use footprints on institutional sites through a type 2 process rather than a type 3 process if the intended ultimate use is a housing use consistent with the zoning of that site. So I completely understand that we are vested to the rules that we filed under, and that doesn't come into play here. But I thought it's worth noting, just from a higher level kind of policy standpoint and where the city is going with things, that there is a desire within the city at a policy level to see some underutilized institutional sites that are encumbered by conditional uses to kind of streamline their pathway to allow for housing, given the, you know, the more global housing crisis that we're in. And so, again, not something that we're filing under, but just kind of broader context. I mentioned that there have been numerous outreach events. Last January, there was a media event on the site, on the St. Mark site, when there was an initial grant authorized for a housing project on the property. The mayor was on the site. Fairly noteworthy event that sort of kick-started some of the process that's happened to this point. Back in the summer, the church had an ice cream social, went to the neighbors immediately surrounding the property and invited them to learn more about what's planned for the project, for the site. We had a neighborhood meeting all of the notice requirements for the actual project in September and presented to the South Tabor Land Use Committee at that meeting. And then just earlier this past month, both members of Duguid Multnomah, who would be the ultimate owner and operator of a housing project on the site, and Home First, who is the who would be a part of developing that north property, attended that meeting also just to give an update on what their plans are for the property. So generally speaking, I think we're in agreement with the staff conditions and the findings. We appreciate working with Rodney through the application process, and we feel comfortable with those as they stand. I did want to offer a little bit of input regarding the counts and whether or not they occurred during a school, while school is in session. We were requested after our initial application to ensure that we had counts, on-street parking counts, during the daycare event, and make sure that our data contemplated and represented that event. So the on-street counts that we took on December 11th and 12th actually occurred also during a typical school day. And so the 54 cars, or, I'm sorry, there were 61 occupied spaces out of 137 available spaces during that event, during that AM event, in which that happened to occur at the same time essentially as when the first bell rings at the school. So the findings for that event in December that were described by PBOT here regarding the daycare also captured a school event. So I just want to make sure that we made sure that was understood. We have experts here from our traffic team. Lancaster Engineering is here and available to answer any questions that come up. Also, Pastor Larson from St. Mark's is here, and I know that she's happy and ready, willing, and able to answer any questions about just site operations and activities at the church property. Again, although the actual future housing project is not the subject of this request specifically, we do have representatives from Duguid Multnomah. Chris Iaso from Duguid Multnomah is here, and Rob Justice from Home First is here as well. I know that they're happy and more than willing to provide their card and be available afterwards if folks would like to speak to them after this hearing. With that, I think I'll just stop and offer our team for any immediate questions, and then we'll probably hold any further comment for any rebuttal that comes up.
Okay. Yeah, my main question was regarding the parking, and I think PBOT addressed that, and we can maybe wait to see if anything else comes up during the rest of the public hearing. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Is there anybody who's not part of the applicant's team but still wants to testify in favor of the application? Okay. All right, now's the opportunity for people who are opposed to the application to testify. Whoever wants to go first can go first, or people just...
I can go first. I have questions.
You know, generally it's a time to sort of talk about the approval criteria, but staff is usually pretty helpful about answering questions if they can, kind of going above and beyond the call of duty, so we'll leave it up to Mr. Jennings if he can answer them or not. But so if everybody just give us your name and spell your last name for the record, that'd be great.
My name is Jamshid Mehr, M-E-H-R. You want this spelling of first name too? J-A-M-S-H-I-D.
Thanks.
I have a first question about the R2 zoning. 2,000 per unit. So this is half an acre. So, and they're even cutting that into half. So it's a quarter of an acre that they're building on. So that density to me is like, they want 20 units plus another 15. It seems a bit high, isn't it?
Another thing that's happening soon is on March 1st, R2 zoning is actually going to be replaced by an RM1 zoning, which has a different way of calculating density. And I'm sure the applicant can explain how that proposal would work for what they're proposing. Originally, the history of this is the applicant wasn't looking for a way to transfer density from a church site to the portion of the R2 church site onto the north parcel, which the current zoning code allows them to do. But in anticipation of a new zoning designation that calculates density through a floor area calculation rather than an area calculation, they probably are not necessarily going to have to do that in order to achieve the density that they want on the site. But again, this is all issues that aren't related to this specific request, because it's that whatever development they do on there is going to have to be the development standards that apply.
My concern is that how many people are going to be added there? 50, 200? How many people are going to come there? Because if you bring up the map, you can see.
Mr. Mayor, could you speak into the microphone just so we can hear it on the record?
Okay,
thanks.
So I'm doing the same thing you're doing.
I'm doing it too. So.
So if you bring up the map, you can see that it basically is like a two-lot residential, and you're trying to pack a whole bunch of people there. That, to me, is a recipe for disaster. As we know, City of Portland used to give out permits because of dollar sign in front of them, so City of Portland is biased. They used to give out permits to buildings with no parking. This was in the past, until citizens like me revolted in City of Portland now, because their thing was, the PBOT was, everybody's going to ride a bike. Well, hogwash. That's not going to happen.
So, Mr. Mayor, could we get your address so we have that for the record, too?
Okay, yes. P.O. Box 5844, Portland, Oregon, 97228.
Thanks. And so I know, and Mr. Jennings has been really nice to sort of talk about the potential future development of the north part, and I think that's probably why a lot, if not all of you, are concerned. Mm-hmm. And it's all sort of speculative at this point, so it's nice for him to sort of talk to a little bit so you guys sort of get an idea, but I don't want to spend a really long time talking about an application that's not before us today. Okay. So I'll let you talk about it as much as you want, or maybe the applicant talked about it a little bit, but I don't want to get into a public hearing about what might happen on the property that's not this application. You understand what I'm talking about?
So I shouldn't be concerned about the parking?
No, you can.
The amount of people that are there?
You can be I think what we're concerned in this case, we look at the parking just that's going to be generated by the church. We don't look at any parking that might be generated by what they might in the future do with the north part, the transitional housing part. So when, I'm not going to speculate about what that'll be, but I assume that there's any parking from that that would be generated by that development would have to be addressed in that next application that comes in. So here, the churches, they are eliminating some parking spots. So the question is whether or not there's enough room on the street for those. And some people have raised that issue.
For the church, not the development. So development parking, because when I read that stuff, I was...
It's a little confusing because I think the applicant's traffic impact analysis sort of merged them together and talked about them both. So I was a little confused at first, too.
Right.
So, but for the purpose of the decision I have to make on this application, the only thing at issue is whether there's enough parking for the uses that are going to be generated by the church.
Church.
Okay. Not whatever housing they might do on the north part of the parking lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Oh.
Hi.
Hello.
My name is Kristen Heing, and I spell my name H-E-Y-I-N-G, and I am 3323 Southeast 55th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97206. My house was actually shown in the picture.
Oh.
So basically, I'm not entirely opposed to this development, but I do have some major concerns, and I just kind of want to start by saying that it was brought up that there was a lot of notice about this development, and I live literally on the fence line to the church. And
so when you say this development, are you talking about reducing the footprint of the conditional use or talking about the transitional housing type?
All of it. Okay. Reducing the conditional use. I learned about that about 2.5 weeks ago, and I'm the person right on the fence line. So the first notice I really had was a notice in my mailbox by some other neighbor talking about the land use committee meeting that South Tabor Neighborhood Association was putting on. So there wasn't notice about this from the church, and just recently they put out a flyer for an ice cream social that listed the Finley Commons development, but that was only like a week ago. So I just want to put that on record.
Okay.
So I have a statement that I'm going to read to make it more clear.
Okay.
Okay. So... I'm the neighbor that is on the fence line, which I've just talked about, of the development. So this development affects me and the other neighbor that is also on the property line, on the fence line, the most. I understand that this hearing is not about discussing the building that is being developed. I also understand that the overall site plan has been changed since the January 15th notice of public hearing was mailed to me and the surrounding neighbors. So I understand that's changed. That's what I want to talk about. As it has been redrawn, it leaves 20 parking spaces designated to the church and approximately 12 parking spaces designated to the new development. In the staff report, PBOT recommended at that time that a minimum of 32 parking spaces be maintained across the properties which are party to this land use review. It is my understanding that due to this future development being so close to Powell, it means that that development is not required to have any designated parking. If this is the case, my question is, what stops the developer from developing those additional spaces that are allocated for parking once the land has been sold to them? So essentially, from my understanding, there's supposed to be parking designated in the area that has been redrawn that is going to be sold to the developer. And they're not required to have any parking. So what stops that from being developed? Because there is no requirement for parking. So I think this is problematic because the members of St. Mark's Church can use more than 20 spaces on Sunday, because I've actually live right next door and I see that they use more than 20 spaces. Plus they have meetings that occur on a regular basis where many vehicles are parked in that lot. I've also observed the parking lot being used for camp activities in the summertime, and an overflow outside gathering place for those that attend meetings and like the food pantry on a regular basis. So they have people in that parking lot often, you know, just talking and hanging out, and it's, you know, pretty substantial. So because the lot is not only used for parking, but as an overflow gathering space and camp recreational uses, plus it's needed for members and attendees that need both ADA parking and parents dropping their kids off at school, I feel that the church should maintain ownership of all the 32 parking spaces that will remain after the development has been built. If the church owns the parking, then there is a guarantee that those full 32 parking spaces and the area that is comprised for these spaces will remain for use by the church members, preschool attendees, and overflow for spring and summer activities. If this site is to be successful, the church needs to maintain appropriate parking and an outside area that is in the back of the church versus the front, which aligns to Paul Boulevard, which is a very, very busy street. So if anyone wants to hang out after church or any of these other activities, they can't do it really in the front because of it being right on Powell. And there is currently, there was the market, the Asian market there. It is up for sale right now. And when it was open, for a very long time, there was significant amount of additional parking occurring. So they basically shared that parking lot, and they had an agreement that, you know, anyone who came to the market could park in their parking lot. And so it was really well used. But if they sell that, which they're planning on selling that property, all of that additional parking will be most likely be put into the neighborhood. And we really don't know what that's going to become at this point. So I really feel like if the church maintains those 32 parking spaces, they will have some leverage to create an agreement with the new business to share parking if it's necessary. If the church does not maintain the parking, there's no leeway because the church essentially is only being left with the amount of spots that they typically need on a Sunday. So there's just no additional. So this development is obviously going to impact me in a very substantial way due to it being only about 10 to 15 feet away from my fence line. So I would like that to be acknowledged and consider that all the additional parking needed for these potential future uses will have a significant impact on me as well. I believe the church retains those 32 spaces. You know, if Finley Commons needs parking, they can create a shared use agreement. And basically, at the South Tabor Neighborhood Public Land Use meeting, the executive director was there and he said that typically, you know, they don't necessarily have cars, so there might not even be a need to share that additional parking, but they could create that. And I'm just very concerned that it could just be developed. You know, there's just nothing stopping that area for being developed if that line is drawn in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. That's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
All right, sir, you can come next.
Good afternoon, hearings officer Wilson. Am I close enough to this?
I think we're good, yeah.
Good, okay. I'm John Carr, C-A-R-R, that's J-O-H-N. I'm the land use chair for the South Tabor Neighborhood Association.
You get your address just in case.
Yep, address P.O. Box 86836. That's Portland 97286. So I want to first start by thanking Rodney and the staff at BDS as well as the applicant. The applicant and their team have come to a couple of our neighborhood association meetings. Also want to thank St. Mark's Church, who is a member of our neighborhood association and a member of the neighborhood. So also to clarify that I'm not here in opposition. South Tabor Neighborhood Association does not oppose this application. We do have concerns, and I'm here to express some of those and some suggested conditions of approval. Also want to note for your benefit that what I'm going to talk about here, I'm not submitting any additional written text. So,
and I do have your letter from the 21st.
We do have that, and I will be referencing that.
Okay.
And I also want to thank individual neighbors, or at least acknowledge, I think some of your questions about the timeline, whether it's 100-day, 120-day, or you know, really having to draw a line between what is considerable in this review and what is not, sort of goes back to the origin of this project and some exploration by the applicant about how to achieve this best. It's a complicated land use situation, and you know, you're dealing with multiple zones, kind of a weirdly shaped property, a number of factors. So it is something that sort that has been in flux from public notices that we've received. Some of them suggest there are approval criteria that do factor into whether, you know, what is being proposed for that north site. And then there are conditions of approval suggested on by staff on the last in his report that sort of close off some of that. So I just want to, you know, appreciate neighbors for doing their best to understand where those distinctions are. As you see, South Tabor Neighborhood Association submitted a response to the case planner on January 21st. That's in the file as Exhibit F4. We raised some questions about the application and outlined suggestions for some conditions of approval, and those dealt with the garbage and recycling area and the requirements around that, the playground that's associated with the preschool, the requirements around that, and then a proposed joint use parking agreement that was in the application. The question I'm kind of left with today is, which proposal are we considering today? So if I'm looking at what was proposed and sort of sent out around the time of the initial notice of the hearing, that refers to 0.53 acres being removed from the conditional use site. With the changes and the suggested conditions of approval from staff, we're looking at a revised site plan that was received 12 days ago that shows a 0.43 area being removed from the site. For my purposes, I'm going to address both. I think initially South Tabor Neighborhood Association, our letter addressed kind of the situation when it was 0.53 acres being removed. And so I'll just kind of recap our concerns about that. I'd refer you then too to the appendix in the letter that we sent, which again, Exhibit F4. How the single room housing type on the north portion of the site is defined, whether that's defined as SRO or a group living facility, would relate directly to this conditional use review, since it affects whether joint use parking is allowed. And this, again, was proposed in the original application. So the zoning code 33266110B3 says joint use of required parking spaces is allowed only if the uses and housing types to which the parking is accessory are allowed in the zone where the parking is located. So that's the nexus between trying to understand, is single room occupancy as proposed by the applicant even allowed? If it's not, then the joint use parking agreement could not be approved as part of the conditional use review. Or if there's some question as to whether it can be, and we're not willing to settle that question within this review, then it needs to either be conditioned out or it would need to be denied. Again, in that appendix, I gave the definitions from the zoning code of what those different housing types would be. I gave examples as needed to sort of understand, because there is overlap in that, and made the, you know, our sort of assessment that judging from those examples, the single room units that are proposed for the north site would more accurately be described as SRO. And so again, I just refer you to that letter. I'm also can submit some analysis later that just kind of looks at SROs that are in existence in Portland and their respective zoning and see if there are exceptions to, are there SROs that exist in zones where they are prohibited by the zoning code, and if so, why? So just to give you an idea, I found, you know, a number of SROs, some that are in R2, R5, R7, all of those are listed as senior care facilities or adult foster care facilities. So clearly fitting into the examples provided by the code of what qualifies as group living. So again, we raised this just because it could be a problem for the proposed development, in which case any joint parking agreement during this review would not be allowed. Okay, so if it's 0.43 acres that we're talking about, staff suggested solution is to keep 20 spots on, and I suppose the applicant too with the revised site plan, keep 20 spots on the church site within the conditional use. And in this case, we need to talk about on-site parking. And two things specifically, I think. One is the amount of parking, that is what minimums do we use to establish through this conditional use review what those parking minimums would be for this site. And second is the relationship between the sites. And by this I mean how access to that parking is proposed to be shared. Will any parking spaces be shared in the future, and how much parking is reasonable to consider between the two sites? So first let's talk about the amount of parking. The applicant proposes reducing on-site parking spaces for the church only from 50 to 20. 20 is consistent with the transportation analysis provided by the applicant and fairly consistent with neighbor observations. PBOT has said they're fine with it. Of course, PBOT says they're fine with zero, given the bunch of parking that's on street, as far as its impact on the transportation system. If this were set by the minimums that are outlined in Chapter 33266, Table 2662, for a religious institution, and I know that table doesn't establish those minimums in this case because this is a conditional use review, but by my reading, looking only at the main assembly area of the church, figuring it conservatively at 2,300 square feet, the church would be required to have between 23 and 34 spaces. So 20 spaces for the church is in the ballpark for a facility like this. Providing this parking is also consistent with the rationale that the church put forth in multiple past conditional use reviews, all of which are included in the record. In these reviews and applications, the church talks about relieving the pressure of on-street parking from the neighborhood streets to minimize adverse impacts on the neighborhood. So while the demand for on-site parking may have decreased over the years, no one is questioning that a reasonable minimum still needs to be set for this institutional use to fit within and work within a residential neighborhood. The next thing I want to talk about is then the relationship between the sites. Even if 20 spots are left on the church site with a reduced conditional use footprint, and if the joint use is not allowed or it's conditioned away, access to the parking will still depend on an access easement between the sites. On 55th, the driveway and the drive aisles straddle the proposed lot line that would be created through this process. On 54th, the driveway and the drive aisle are fully on the side of the site that is to be removed from the conditional use footprint. Staff's slide is not showing the line at the same location that it is on the submitted site plan. So I think if you look at Exhibit A5, which is the revised site plan, it shows that the proposed location of that lot line is actually south of the driveway entering in on Southeast 54th. So there needs to be some instrument to guarantee that the church has access to the parking spots regardless of what develops on the north portion of that site. To be clear, if we're not to consider a specific proposal for the north site during this review, then we have to consider that it could develop differently than what we know has been proposed. We have to consider it could develop even more densely, either under the current zoning or under the new zoning rules that are coming in March. In any case, the multi-dwelling development could likely have no on-site parking required, given its proximity to frequent service transit. Without some kind of access easement conditioned in this review, then future development could effectively fill that site and cut off access to the church's parking. One remedy would be to include an access easement as a condition of approval. Another would be to condition approval on shifting the property lines so that the driveways and drive aisles also remain in the church conditional use area. And yet another possibility would be to condition approval on having the entire proposed parking area, all 34 spaces, driveways, and drive aisles, remain within the church's conditional use footprint. The church could then decide whether and how to share some of those spots with any future development on the north side. So let me take a pause there for a second. And let me briefly make a case for this one, this idea of all the proposed 34, 32, whatever, parking spots staying within the conditional use footprint. The applicant's transportation analysis shows 32 off-street spaces as a reasonable number to accommodate parking demands between the two sites, a church and a multi-dwelling residential. PBOT staff, in their response to the request for response to the RFR, concurred with those findings and recommended a condition of approval that, quote, a minimum of 32 parking spaces must be maintained across the properties which are party to this land use review. You know, I understand that the ground has shifted somewhat on where to draw the property line and whether joint use parking is allowed between a conditional use and one that is not, but the math hasn't shifted. 32 parking spaces is a reasonable minimum to maintain between the church and a future multi-dwelling residential use. So how can we assure that number, when the future residential development might have no on-site parking required? You could do that now through this review by conditioning approval on having the entire proposed parking area, the 20 spots the church needs, everyone agrees, plus the 14 that were originally proposed for both sites. Consider that a buffer for the church, for its activities, for its camps, for various groups, for it to grow its programming, that kind of thing, or decide what to do, how to share that, how they would like, and have that all remain within the church's conditional use footprint. So what might happen without one of these conditions? Well, we don't know which condition is the best review, whether it's a best solution. An access easement, having driveways and drive aisles remain in the church conditional use area, or having all 32 or 34 spaces remain. But without some condition, here are the issues that we foresee. First is the garbage and recycling area. We're not sure and haven't seen it on the map or a revised map where that would go for the church site, because currently it's on the part, there is their garbage, but it's on the part that's going to be, you know, sold off and redeveloped. So as it looks to kind of have their own garbage and recycling area on their property, it looks like it would encroach on the proposed 20 parking spaces. Second is the required play area for the preschool. Now, I understand they may have options for where to put that and how to do that, but I just want to make sure that would not take up space from the parking lot. And the third is the required landscaping at the lot line. We see this as a potential issue at the driveway on 54th. As I mentioned, the current driveway and drive aisle from 55th straddles the proposed property line, and this allows an exemption from required setbacks and perimeter landscaping. This was referenced earlier, 33266130G2B1. Shared driveways and parking aisles that straddle a lot line do not need to meet setback and perimeter landscaping requirements. But the current driveway and drive aisle off 54th do not straddle the proposed property line. It's south of that driveway and it's right at the edge of that drive aisle. So again, I don't think staff's picture, it kind of had that line pushed out a little bit more than it actually is in that in the site plan. And we can look at that because you have the larger maps with you. So again, if you look at Exhibit A5, you'll see the proposed property line intersects the parking stalls, or it's just at the tip of the parking stalls. At the street, the ramp, it intersects the ramp at the apron of the driveway, and that puts it south of the driveway. And this is per Title 17, Chapter 28, Section 110. Driveways shall be measured lengthwise with the sidewalk on the property line side. So it just takes a closer looking at the map to understand what I'm talking about. Table 2665 shows what landscaping would be needed then in that case if that driveway and drive out do not straddle the property line. And that's a minimum of 5 feet of L3 at the lot line. And it looks like this would take up 8 of the 20 parking spaces. So some condition needs to be made so that the driveway and drive aisle at least straddle the lot line. Otherwise, the perimeter landscaping standard would apply and reduce the parking drastically. This would make staff's condition of approval B, the review and permit of parking lot landscaping that meets the standards of 33266 and 22248. That should be 33248. Difficult to achieve. Finally, I'll end with a couple questions we have about the staff report. Recommended condition of approval A, parking spaces on the 0.43 acre portion of the site removed from the conditional use boundary may not be used by the church unless approved through a future conditional use review. My questions are, how would that arrangement be enforced? What would that look like prior to the development of the 0.43 acre site? And what would that look like after the development of the site? So if the church is forbidden from using parking that it currently has access to, how is that enforced? If a future conditional use review were required to allow shared parking between the sites, which site owner would apply for that? So which site would that conditional use apply to? Would it be a review of the church's conditional use review, or would it be a new conditional use permit on the residential development site? Okay, I know that was a lot, but thank you. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have of South Tabor Neighborhood Association. Again, we are not opposed to this, to approval here. Just want to make sure that all of these things are kind of being looked at and covered. And I also request that the record be held open for 7 days. And this because a new site plan, Exhibit C1, was published only 12 days ago, changing the scope of the application. So I just want to give other members of the public a chance if they need that to review that and submit additional evidence. Thank you.
All right, thanks. And so the stuff you were talking about, the shared driveways and why they need the landscaping, are you going to submit that? Is that on the stuff you're reading them today, or is that, because I don't think that was specifically in that other letter, was it?
Yeah, no, because that referred to, this is in relation to the newly revised site plan. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any testimony in writing additional to what I said, but I would refer you to the maps and exhibits that I mentioned and the code areas that I mentioned.
Okay.
For that.
All right. Thanks. And we'll talk about the open record period at the end of the hearing. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Oh, okay, whoever wants to come next can come next. Hello.
My name is Samantha Pummer, and I live at 3324 Southeast 55th Avenue. My first question was a discussion that PBOT had regarding the amount of days that were given to actually count the percentage of parking spaces used in a given day. And I didn't know if that was written down.
The applicant can maybe address that during rebuttal.
Okay. So from what I heard, the traffic impact analysis used generated only was based on a 2-day span and did not give an accurate representation of this space. I live across the street from Kristen, and so I have a direct view of the parking spot or the parking lot. There are more cars in the parking lot at a given time than what PBOT had listed. I also share a driveway with my neighbor and therefore rely heavily on street parking. And since this is occurring across from my street, I'll be impacted. As was mentioned before, the Andong Asian Market that's for sale, there is We don't know what is going in there, but future development can also impact street parking, and I'd like that to be considered with the percentages that are listed for current use of the parking. And I also understand that we're not here to discuss the future development of the north parking lot, but I would like to address that if there are going to be employees or visitors to whatever is developed in this north parking lot, that that is additional parking spaces that'll then be used on street parking. And I think my frustrations has been that there hasn't been consistency in the information that has been shared. This meeting was the first and only piece of information that I have received, and so I have felt like I would like future notices to be consistent so that I can be adequately informed on what's going to directly impact my house. And that's everything.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, sir, come on up.
Good afternoon. My name is Simon Moreira, S-I-M-O-N, and my last name is M-O-R-E-I-R-A, neighbor from 3410 Southeast 55th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97206. And it was pointed, excellently explained by the fellow over there, but if we can go back a couple of pictures here from the view that you had from the street. That one. So as I understand, the line goes exactly behind that no truck sign. So all the parking lot that is technically being left for the church has no access. So that's because the entrance to that parking lot is exactly outside the picture there. So all those 10 or 12 parking lots that we can see two cars parked there are what's left for the church with no access. And so I don't know if the zoning needs to be independently defined or if that kind of like sharing situation is something that it can be written in any way, but the way it's stated right now, if there were two independent zoning, then it's going to be a parking with no access. And it was pointed by the fellow colleague, Sir Carr, I think it was his name, but I just wanted to reiterate that situation. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Okay, that appears, oh.
Hi, I'm Douglas Hardy with the Bureau of Development Services, 1900 Southwest 4th. Excuse me. I just wanted to clarify the 100-day versus 120-day, and particularly given the record now has been held open. When the application was first submitted, there was a question of whether they were going to develop the housing within the existing conditional use boundaries or whether they were going to separate that property off and build the housing separately. If they were to build that housing within the existing boundaries of the conditional use, this would be held to the 100-day clock. Given the request now is to remove that about that property from the boundary and effectively develop the housing at a later point, we would be looking at the 120-day clock for this. So I just wanted to clarify that.
That's actually very helpful. So there's no need to schedule the tentative city council appeal?
There's not.
No. Okay. All right. Well, great. That's very helpful. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up for us. Okay, just to make sure there's nobody else who wanted to testify, correct? Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I wanted to just provide a little bit of clarification on the issue of the property boundary here. So going back to this slide, where I had the line drawn in. So, you know, and this is an approximation, but if you look at the exhibit in the staff report, C1, at the end of the page there, you can see that the applicant proposal is...
Can you use the microphone?
Pardon me. If you look at the exhibit C1 in the staff report, you can see that, which is at the last page, on the rear.
Thought that was a 9.
You can see that what the applicant had drawn on the site plan includes a buffer of landscaping along the south perimeter, and then also an area between the on the north side of the existing church building, between the bottom of the where the entire parking area is shifted up about 5 feet. So when I drew this on there, I was anticipating trying to estimate in that where that 5 feet is. So there is a little bit of a if we go back to this other slide, for example, along the boundary there, they are showing a strip of landscaping there. So the parking area that they are anticipating here is not aligned the same as this is. It shifted northward a little bit. So I think that some of the issues that John Carr with the Neighborhood Association brought up relate to that. So, but the bigger issue of access to the site, in retrospect, I don't think we have any, BDS have any objection that there be some kind of access easement to allow access into there to access the spaces. So I just wanted to add that too.
So they will need to, you can't get to the, if they get approved to take this, the 0.43 out, and you have the new line, you won't be able to get into the remaining church parking without basically crossing that line, right?
That would be the case. However, you know, it's going to be up to the church too, to some extent. If they want to retain access to that, they would have to probably ask for some kind of easement rights to get in there when they dispose of the property. It shouldn't use the word dispose, but when they sell the property or separate it off.
Once they do that, assuming they get to that point, if they did something that somehow eliminated their parking access to their parking spots, so if they effectively didn't have any parking spots, they would then be in violation of their conditional use approval, right? And they could be subject to, you know, potentially even having it yanked if they don't have, because if they got approved what they're asking for, they need to provide those 20 on-site spots, and presumably people can get to them, right?
I mean, the staff approval didn't have a requirement that they provide the 20 spaces. It just indicated that if they do have spaces, that they, if they do want to use spaces on the adjacent property and they keep these spaces, they wouldn't be able to use the other spaces through a joint use requirement.
So you're saying that they've wanted to, they could win, if say they get the approval for this and then they sell off or get some sort of agreement for the north part, they could just eliminate their 20 spots?
If I could, Douglas Hart again with BDS. I think given the record has been held open, we will address that particular circumstance related to the easement and the access to the parking. If nothing else, BDS will need to coordinate with PBOT to clarify the standards or the requirements for PBOT in terms of the minimum parking. I think sort of off the cuff, in fact, if those parking spaces are effectively required, I think where you're coming from, if those parking spaces are really required for the remaining institutional use, there would have to be a condition of approval that requires an easement to access those parking spaces. But we will respond to the question as part of the open record period in writing for you.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll stop asking you about that now then. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Mr. Jennings?
No.
Okay. So now the applicant, this is your opportunity for rebuttal.
Sure, thank you. And I've invited Pastor Larson up, also from the church. I think she can speak to maybe some of the questions that came up about camp and active use of that parking area. I may let you go first with that.
So my name is Reverend Elizabeth with a Z, Larson, L-A-R-S-E-N, 5415 Southeast Powell Boulevard, Portland, Oregon, 97206. To clarify some of the uses of the space, for instance, the reference to the camps, that was an agreement with the Trackers Camp to use our parking lot for pickup and drop-off. It is not a camp operated by the church. And once the that we would only be doing that, we only did that because we had the space. So that would not be an ongoing project of St. Mark's. In fact, to clarify even further, the preschools that are in operation at St. Mark's are not an operation of St. Mark's. They are independent preschools. And so, again, those are not a core function of our congregation. There are some meetings that happen at night because we host several NA meetings and an AA meeting. But as far as gathering spaces, once the folks who meet have been told that, for instance, the neighbors have called and said the people were too loud or they didn't like the cigarette smoke drifting over, in general, our friends in those groups have been very good about when they've been asked to just not have cigarettes over in a different spot.
Okay.
I wish that the gatherings of my congregation needed more than 22 parking spaces, but those days have long gone.
Okay.
And I'm happy to field any other questions about the operation of the church and what goes on in the site.
Okay. I don't think I had any other questions, so thank you.
Great. Thank you. So I wanted just to speak to a few of the issues, primarily the ones raised by John Carr, as they were a little bit more technical in nature. He mentioned 33-266-110B, which refers to the joint use of parking. And specifically, the code refers to joint use of parking spaces, not of parking lots. And I think that's an important distinction here, because we do have what we're expecting to be a parking lot that has common access points, but as conditioned, we have a condition that would clearly distinguish spaces for distinct uses. And so I think that's an important point of note. The other thing that he mentioned is the requirement for a buffering if a access is not straddled by a lot line or the lot line straddles. I haven't seen anything, and I think Rodney and I spoke a little bit about this. I don't think that there's any definition to quote-unquote straddling. In this situation, we have a lot line at the north end of the current conditional use boundary that has a jog in it, and that creates differentiating and stepbacks or setbacks from that northern property line. And Rodney, I don't know if you can maybe zip back a slide or two. Where that would be seen. I know on one of the overall, the aerial perspectives, you can see that. Oh, maybe just right there. So
yeah.
You can kind of see northwest, the northern lot line in the northwest area, that property line steps back in that location. And so what that creates is a little bit of a offsetting of your access on the west side on 54th and the access on the east side on 55th. So there's not a perfect alignment of those accesses. And so the only way to have a lot line that is sort of perfectly situated in the center of either of those accesses would be if that lot line offset. Our preference, I know the code's preference when it comes to lot line adjustments, is to, as much as possible, have a straight line resulting from lot line adjustments. And so it made more sense from our perspective to have a straight line lot line adjustment that, albeit extended out at differing points in that access, than to try to have some other sort of line with a kink in it, so to speak. So that's how we arrived at that proposed lot line. And then lastly, I wanted just to say we're fully expecting to have an access easement. I mean, this is, you have two cooperating parties here, the church future owner of that northern piece. So, and not only just for access, but we also have stormwater that we have to address here. And so we're expecting that we'll have stormwater lines that are capturing and conveying stormwater flows to dry wells on the site. So we will have an easement, both an access easement and a stormwater management maintenance easement on that site. And I think we're more than amenable to a condition that would reflect that.
Okay. And do you have a plan to where to put the trash and recycling?
Well, we've talked a little bit about that. I think there is the possibility of having an access on the west side of the church on 54th. We understand that it would need to meet the screening requirements, and we'd work to make sure that that's achieved. I think that's the tentative intent for that.
So there's a feasible way to make sure that you have the trash.
There is multiple different locations where we could find a good place for the trash dumpster and the recycling dumpster.
Okay. Thank you.
And I did not have any other points of note.
Okay. All right. I think that it answers my questions. I think a lot of this will get addressed during the open record period. So I think that's what we have left to address. For people that are maybe not familiar with this process, is once someone's requested to keep the record open, which Mr. Carr did, we have like basically three parts to an open record period. There'll be one, the first part will be where people can submit new evidence, new testimony, new legal arguments, whatever you want to submit, almost like you could submit today. And after that, there'll be another period where you can submit new testimony, evidence, argument, but can only be responding to things that came in during that first open record period. And then finally, there's a third period, which is just for the applicant to submit their final legal argument. They don't get to submit any new evidence. They basically just have a legal brief saying, here's why we should have an approval. So hopefully that makes sense to everybody. Generally, we do a 7-day, 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 unless the applicant wants more time. There's 7 days. Okay with you guys?
Yeah, I think 7 days is fine. Okay. Thank you.
So we will do that. We'll do 7 days, and maybe if you can tell them how they submit things, and if you'll do the dates so I don't get them wrong, that would be great. Sure.
So documentation can be submitted either in writing, you may fax it, you may mail it, or you may bring it to the window. It has to be submitted by 4 p.m. of the date the record closes. So the first date that we have will be February 12th, and that can be submitted, and that is for any new testimony, new documentation. It can be submitted up until 4 p.m. at our window, and so it has to be at the hearing office window, not with the planner, so we have to have it stamped by 4 p.m. The second date will be on February 19th, and that's the date for, I believe, for rebuttal information. And then the third date will be February 26th, and that's the last date that the applicant can respond to anything that was received. And again, everything has to be submitted into our office by 4 p.m. And you may fax it again or mail it or bring it into the office.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then if you mail it, it has to get here. It's not when it's postmarked. It's when it arrives. Okay. So with that, we can conclude the public hearing, so there'll be no more public testimony. The record is left open for the dates that we just talked about. And after the record's closed, I'll have a decision out at the very latest, 17 days after that, and which if somebody doesn't like that, then they can appeal it to the City Council. So with that, that concludes today's proceedings. Thank you, everybody, for being polite and cordial. I appreciate that. That doesn't always happen, so thank you very much.
Thank you.